Okay, it is around 1:18 Eastern, Central, excuse me, Dennis. And we're going to do a little podcast today. People ask, why would you switch to the Mac? What are the benefits of switching to the Mac? What are the differences? So I thought we would have just a little informal chat on Windows and the Mac. And I have with me today two gentlemen who use the Mac either exclusively or in tandem with Windows, and I'll let them tell you about that. We have Mr. Dennis Bartlett, who is in, are you in Ontario, Dennis?
Yeah, Toronto,
Ontario. Yeah, he's in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And we have Mr. Lewis Brock, who is in North Wales, UK. Good
That's
evening
right.
to you, sir.
All right.
And Lewis is a little later than the rest of us. It's after 7 where Lewis is, so.
That's right.
Dennis, why don't you start us off telling us who you are and what you do, and let's get you introduced. And then Lou, after he's done, you go ahead and I'll go last.
Okay. I'm Dennis Bartlett. Used to live in the States. Used to live in Minnesota and had my own business there at one point that was Speech and Braille Unlimited. And then I moved to California, where I'm originally from, and worked for a couple of companies there, and then married a Canadian, so I moved to Canada. So right now I'm here in Canada working part-time for Frontier Computing, which is one of the two major assistive technology companies in the country. And I'm doing product testing and evaluation and all those fun things, but recently switched to a Mac for a couple of reasons. One, I kind of want to get back into the music business that I did in a previous life. And two, I felt it was now a viable alternative, and one of the other ulterior motives for switching to a Mac was that I got tired of paying SMA fees on top of SMA fees for Windows products when I could get something that had a screen reader in the operating system, and when I upgraded the operating system, it would upgrade my screen reader, and I didn't have to pay anybody any SMA fees.
So, right. And that about covers where you are, and you're happy yeah. with your Mac so far?
Oh, yeah, very. I haven't. The only reasons that I have turned on my Windows machine in the last month and a half or so have been to get some information that I had stored there and move it to the Mac.
Well, you know, you don't actually have to turn on your Windows system to do that. There's actually a cable that'll go from an IDE hard drive to a USB port.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm being facetious.
Yeah, but then I would have had to
set it up, didn't you?
Yeah. I would have had to pull the drive on the laptop, though.
Oh, yeah, so that's true.
That takes a little bit of work.
That's true. So, thank you, sir. And if you'll hang on just a second, let me get Lewis. What about it, Lou? What? Introduce yourself. Tell them what you do and about your life.
Well, my name's Lou. I'm 23. I was born here in Wales. My background in computing, I first started using the Macintosh back in probably 93 or 94, I think. And was an absolute huge lover of macOS, and of course the main screen reader that was used at the time was Outspoken for Macintosh. From that day, I'd been using Macs up until probably about 2001, when Arva Technologies decided we're no longer going to produce the screen reader Outspoken, typical. And so through my education, I was forced to have to use Windows. And I have to admit, I hated every single bit of it. I didn't like Windows at all. I just got completely sick of it. Then the stress of having to learn a completely different operating system, a screen reader that is overcomplex, expensive, and ridiculous to maintain. Of course, we're talking about JAWS for Windows here. And I'd I'd still been relying on a couple of Macs within my time as well, some older G3s, even a G4 base unit for quite a bit. And January 2008 saw the day when I sold basically my PC workstations to go Macintosh. And I am now the proud owner of a top-of-the-range iMac Intel Core 2 and a MacBook Pro, both of them used for studio work. Being a musician, composer, sound engineer, I rely completely on the Macintosh. I will never go back to Windows. And I get so much power, control, and the best screen reader in the world. I can actually say it. From experience using other screen readers on the market, such as Jaws, Window Eyes, Dolphin HAL, Supernova, you name it. And VoiceOver under OS 10.5 is absolutely amazing. I can't be without it. So that's it from me, really.
Right, there you go. And we now know a lot about you, don't we? Well, let's see. I'm Shane Jackson, and I am 34.
That's a nutcase.
Yeah, well, we understand that, but we don't want to scare people off, do we? Anyway, I've been in adaptive technology for 18 years. I began in 1990 with an Apple IIe with a slot buster. No, an Echo PC. Echo, what do you call that thing back then? It was an Echo for Apple.
Yeah,
Echo
GP,
PC was what we called it. Yeah, remember that?
Yep.
The PC card and the little round speaker, and the had the little square speaker with the round grill in the middle. And it was robotic. You know, it was so awesome. But I got into Apple using DOS 3.3 and ProDOS version 4. I used several CD. Boy, it's been a long time, hadn't it? Floppy disks, yeah, 5 1/4 inch floppies, and I used ProWords and AppleWorks, or AppleWorks as Echo called it. Well, in January of 91, I got my first home PC, and they purchased what was called a Double Talk then. And what the Double Talk did was it ran the Echo protocol, which was called Text Talker Point Blind. That's the software that run it, or just Text Talker if you were using ProDOS. And it also ran the Slot Buster, which was called ProScat. That was the little binary file that ran to run the Slot Buster, and a Double Talk would do either. And so I had the Double Talk, and I had my own speaker, and I used the Apple speaker too, but I've still got the original Double Talk and the original cable stored. So if I ever get an Apple IIe or GS, I'm going to be home free. I'll have my old ProDOS system, and I'll have the old Double Talk. Anyway, I went into the PC world by force. My Apple blew up, and I blew up my Apple, I should say. And my mother bought a PC at the time. I was going to college, couldn't afford it myself. She helped me buy a PC, and it was running DOS 5. And DOS 5 was what I used with WordPerfect 5.1 for many years. I started off with a Arctic speech chipset, Arctic Symphonics, with Business Vision 3.08. And I used Vision 3.09, and I was on the list for WinVision, but I canceled out after, in 95, while I was, no, I'm sorry, 96, while I was attending training at the E.H. Gentry Technical Facility, which I didn't need and which was ridiculous. I ended up teaching rather than training. We were the first in the state of Alabama that we know of to install WinVision on a Win95 system. Now, JAWS had just come out with their first product in 95, and WindEyes had just come out in 95. And I was using demos of WindEyes. I had never seen JAWS yet. I'd seen JAWS for DOS. And so I ended up dumping WinVision. I said, this is ridiculous. I don't like the layout and don't like the way it's done. So I ended up using Window Eyes. I had switched to Window Eyes demo, but there was a glitch in whatever they were ordering for me, and they ended up getting me JAWS for Windows 1.1.75. I used JAWS until I could get Window Eyes again, and used Window Eyes and JAWS alternatively, or alternately, I should say, between 98 and 07. I had dealings with Outspoken for Windows. I liked it, and I had seen Outspoken on the Macintosh, and I liked the Macintosh better than I did Windows. I never could get where I would like Windows. I hated it. I hate to use that term, but you know, this is a podcast where we're expressing our views, and I hated Windows. I like DOS. I like the old text based.
Your contact Lino L. Morales is unavailable.
Operating system, and so I didn't get into Windows too well, but I wanted to stay current, so I learned everything there was to know about it. And after having used, as Lou said, almost every Windows screen reader, I just never could get satisfied. The Braille display support was good. I enjoyed that. But thanks to Mac Leopard, I've got Braille display support again. I switched to the Mac in December of 07 after hearing Jerry Hallaton, or Slough, do a presentation. And I also heard John Gunn and Scott Howell do presentations on VoiceOver. And I said, you know what? I can do this. We went to the Apple store. I just happened to be starting a new company, Eyes on Technology, and we're still brand new. We don't even have a good website yet. All we have is a WordPress blog up there. But that's fine. We'll get there. We've got a web developer helping us out. And anyway, so we put a MacBook on the business card. And I've been using a MacBook ever since. I closeted myself for 2 weeks. Learned almost everything there is to know about VoiceOver and other programs for the Mac. And I did nothing else except work on the Mac. My business partner even said, don't focus on work or anything like that. You focus on the Mac. Got involved with other Mac users on two of the Mac lists. And here we are. So three Mac users from three different backgrounds. All of us have dealt with Windows, though. And all of us have dealt with DOS and maybe Linux to some degree. I don't know.
Yeah.
So OS 2.
OS 2. Oh, now there was the operating system. What did you think about OS 2?
I loved OS 2.
Oh, wasn't it wonderful? Did you use screen reader?
System.
Yeah.
You used screen reader with that, right?
Yep, use screen reader with that.
Oh, man. OS 2 was awesome. Lou, did you ever use OS 2?
Yeah. I used to use OS Warp 4 as well, funnily enough.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I did. That's
That was a nice, lightweight operating system.
And to I still have it.
I don't.
I have it.
I'd love a copy, actually. As soon as I can find one, I will.
I use that. I used to love it.
On a Mac.
Yeah.
I used to love it because I was, at that time I was working for a data recovery company, and I could run Windows apps if I needed to, or DOS, or OS 2. So it was nice. That was actually my, when I worked for that company, that was actually my first exposure to a Mac running Outspoken and System 7. And because the company wrote a device driver, because at that time you could not put a third-party hard drive in a Mac.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. So the company that I worked for wrote a device driver that allowed you to do that. So since I was in technical support, I needed to know how that worked. So I had a workstation that was my regular, you know, heavy-duty workstation that I used every day, and then I had a junk workstation that I just ran stuff on and blew it up every day, I think. and then a Mac to work with people that needed help with the device drivers. So,
so you used OS 2?
Yeah, used OS 2.
I absolutely loved it. OS 2, had they marketed it properly, would still be the operating system of choice for a lot of people.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. And Warp, every time I hear the word Warp, I want to go get my old PC out and put OS 2 on it. Of course, you can't, you know, I can't now. I want to talk to you guys, too, about a question that a lot of people are asking me, and I want to get your opinions. I've gave my answer in a podcast the other day, but I want to get your opinions. I'm a Windows user. Why should I even think about the Mac? In other words, why, and I'll go with Lou first here, why should I even consider the Mac? And now, talk to the comfortable Windows user and the not-so-comfortable Windows user. In other words, a comfortable Windows user probably won't want to switch. It's gonna be just like you learning Windows after being a Mac user for so long. They don't want the learning curve. But talk exactly to that for a few minutes.
Well, if you're ever in the situation as a Windows user, and this happened to me, when you're in the middle of using an application that you actually want to work with, say whether it's Pro Audio, Office applications, anything like that, and your screen reader, such as JAWS for Windows, Dolphin HAL, or WindowEyes in some cases, may crash. Or if you're in the situation whereby an application doesn't work, what do you do? Do you contact a script developer who has years of experience plus coding knowledge to write the scripts for you, but that person is going to charge you? Okay, fair enough. That's one instance. Somebody recently brought to my attention a rather interesting comment. Why should we consider VoiceOver when it's just like Narrator? Well, put it this way, it's not. Windows Narrator is a very basic screen reader with the very basic fundamentals. It is unable to work cohesively with any application. It will be able to give you basic navigation. It is unable to give you direct access to certain applications, most applications which are coded by Microsoft and other developers. So basically, Narrator won't do a thing for you. So you then end up having to spend thousands of dollars, or in our case, UK sterling, on a screen reader platform that costs more per year to run than a Macintosh would ever cost. When you come to using a Macintosh, as it came to me when I was back in the days of OS 6 and OS 7, using Outspoken was in fact at the time one of the best solutions going. But of course, in 2001, when Alva Technologies ceased to be, and when Apple had launched OS X 10.0, there were a lot of challenges ahead. So, of course, as it would be. So, a couple of years ago, OS 10.4 comes out, Tiger. And, of course, the birth of one of the best screen readers in the world. It's easier to use. It's more stable. It has features that are more well-known than they would be in JAWS or certain other screen readers. Plus, working on the Macintosh to people is actually a lot easier than Windows, and I can say that from personal experience. I always found Windows to be very slow, not very responsive.
Did we drop it?
No. And with all this going on, I just thought, I've had enough of Windows. So I took the plunge and went for these two new Macs I'm using. And Leopard, to me, has changed my life. It has actually changed my life, ladies and gentlemen, because without Leopard, I wouldn't be able to work in any recording studio. I wouldn't be able to perform any of the tasks that I want to. without having to rely on a screen reader that costs over £1,000 to run and then maintain it. With Leopard, many key features that can be called upon with VoiceOver are instantly available, such as being able to have access to all information in, say, Mail. And Mac Mail, by the way, beats Outlook by every standard.
What then?
Exactly. Mac Mail has the ability to auto-import and auto-create your account, which you have used on a Windows machine. Say, as an example, AOL users, MSN users, you name it. This system can automatically set up your mail system. You can tune it to your heart's content. Getting back to VoiceOver, there is basically not much that you need to do to set it up at all. When you first buy your Mac, it'll boot up, it will play the demo tune and stuff like that for you. And then it will give you an announcement, basically giving you the option to launch VoiceOver or learn the utility before you launch it. Or, if you're going to use it straight away, just press the Command key, which for the Windows user is the Alt key, and F5. This will automatically load VoiceOver. It is faster to run. It requires less memory and CPU usage than JAWS or WindowEyes can use. Plus, the ability to use it right out of the box. No alterations. You might want to change your speech rate or the voices that you use.
Sure.
Now, for users of screen readers who have got so fed up with Eloquence, or some users who may just be sick and tired of, say, DeckTalk or certain other products, Apple ship with VoiceOver, which is already built into Tiger and Leopard, the screen reader, the voice called Alex, which is available in Leopard.
Leopard only.
Basically, exactly. It's only available in Leopard. In Tiger, you have Vicky and one or two other voices, which do complement it quite well. But Alex is a major improvement because Alex is able to, that's a perfect example, human speech, you can pause within speech, you're breathing. Alex emulates all of that classic behavior and becomes a fluid voice. So you could be reading a document and Alex will give you a clearer document readout than other screen readers would ever do. Of course, you might get, with, say, JAWS 9, the RealSpeak solo voices. But the disadvantage to RealSpeak is that it requires more CPU power to your system than any other system, than any other screen reader. So, using Alex, you get better speech, more accurate delivery of what is there. You're able to work fluidly within the operating system.
Yeah, but we want to be clear, though, that there's some serious bugs in Alex.
There are some serious bugs, I have to say.
There are. They need to fix those. That's one thing I want to talk about with you in a second, about things that need to be fixed. But you've given a lot of reasons why the Windows user would switch. And you were a Windows user for a while. How long did you use Windows?
Since 2001 to end of 2007, about 6 years.
Yeah. Dennis, talk a while. What about you? Why would Windows users want to switch to the Mac, if at all?
I know contact Brandon Kyle Armstrong is available.
Would not. So why would people switch to the Mac, and what would be the benefits as you see them, and drawbacks if you see them? Anything that would be related to that.
The benefits I see to switching to a Mac are, as I said in the beginning, you know, you're not not paying out every year a couple hundred dollars for SMAs. And, you know, over 3 years you could buy a new computer. But the operating system is easy to use. It can be as complex as you want it to be. You can go in and, since it's Unix-based, you can go to the console and use Unix-type commands like we used to have to do in the old internet days when you logged into the internet and you ended up at a shell prompt, at a Unix prompt, and then you had to type in a command to get where you wanted to go back then, back in the old dial-up days.
Absolutely.
So you can do that, and you can get as technical as you want to get, or you can keep it simple and just run the applications that are included with the Mac, and run that way. There are a couple of things, you know, a couple of applications that you'll probably want to get different versions of, different applications of, such as a word processor. If you do a lot of word processing and you're used to Office, then you'll want to look at a couple of different applications to help you do that, especially if you create tables, things like that. Reasons why you wouldn't want to switch: if you are a longtime Windows user and Windows is basically a business system. It really wasn't ever really designed for the home user or the creative user. It was designed to get business done, and so the reasons that you wouldn't want to switch is that, of course, we all have you have access to products like Microsoft Office, which you will find in most office settings, corporate settings where you work, those types of things. And if that's your primary use, then you're at this point you're not going to want to switch to running a Mac. So for those people, you might want to switch just to have a Mac, be able to learn it. But now with since we're Intel based, you can also install Windows on a Mac and use applications such as Fusion or Boot Camp to access Windows. So you can run both on one system. Personally, I chose not to because I wanted to basically live in the Mac world. So yeah. I don't have Windows on this system. I didn't want the temptation of, oh well, I can get this done quickly in Windows. I didn't want that temptation. So I just didn't put it on here.
Well, Dennis, I'm glad you said that, and I want to stop you right there, and I want to ask you a question, and I think I know what your answer is going to be. How did Windows get where it is? Did we just sit and go back to DOS instead of staying in the Windows environment? I hear this all the time. Well, I can't get my sound editing done, so I go do it in Windows and come back to the Mac. Well, if we keep doing that, we're never going to get our sound editing needs met on the Macintosh. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that, yes.
Lou?
Simon?
It's one of those things that you just can't.
Your contact, Daryl Chandro, is available.
We can't keep going backward in order to get that to work. And Lou, are you still with us?
Yeah.
What do you
I have to say, there are some rather annoying misconceptions which are spoken of about the Macintosh.
Uh-huh.
Which are that the Macintosh is primarily designed for graphic design usage. Back in the early days of the Macintosh, from, say, OS 7, maybe even earlier, probably OS 6 on the Macintosh Classic, yes, it was designed mainly for business usage, like most machines, as well as graphic design, but... And I have to say this as a professional musician, as a composer who spends his time writing music on different instruments and dedicating my life to what I love best. The Macintosh, when I started, was a brilliant tool for music. And A lot of people these days are saying that, oh, Windows is so much better to run Pro Audio software. No, it isn't. As a perfect example, Windows XP and Windows Vista. Now, I had used Vista when I had invested in a laptop which I had dedicated for Pro Audio. So I had JAWS version 8, Cakewalk Sonar version 6, Sony SoundForge 8, and Sibelius and stuff like that. And I have to say, using it for Pro Audio was really poor. It was slow, it was buggy as anything. In the middle of a recording session, I had a major recording session to do on a Windows XP-based machine while I was at college doing my graduate in classical music. And at this time, what had happened? Halfway through a track, a 64-channel recording, optical recording, fine. And it crashed. It just rebooted the system completely, and we lost an entire day's work. And I had to spend days trying to recover data. Well, put it this way, that was another reason why I got sick of Windows. Having to rely on JAWS all the time for running audio when there are problems associated, and many JAWS users will notice this. If you have multiple sound cards installed, as an example, Freedom Scientific announced a fix a couple of years ago which requires a resource edit where you have to change a script in the config INI file for JAWS. That then takes control of the sound cards. But one slight mistake will take your sound cards offline and stop JAWS working. That is a big pain. I spend so much time doing that. Now that I use the Mac for Pro Audio work, I am spending a lot of time with two major areas in accessibility development. At present, I'm spending time with Steinberg in relation to bringing Cubase 4 to the accessibility market. As many years ago, when it was back on the Macintosh, Cubase for Mac OS 7, it worked well with voice... Outspoken! Sorry, I fluffed. Cut. And with Outspoken for Mac OS 7 and Cubase, of course, before that was Notator and the likes of...
Well, we don't want to get into a discussion of the software because most people listening will have no idea what Cubase is. But what you're saying is the audio is there.
The audio is there. It is available.
It's ready to go.
Just before I go, just before I cut myself on this.
Yeah.
For any form of audio recording, we've got stuff like GarageBand, which is part of 508, which ships free with all Macs. Yeah. As well as some other applications that are available. GarageBand is rather accessible, has a couple of glitches, but what doesn't? And it's designed for basic audio recording, bit of MIDI recording, editing. And Apple at present are working on the fixes for it. There is another product which Apple have launched, well, have been dealing with for a couple of years, ever since eMagic were bought out by Apple, which is Logic. It's available as Express and Logic Studio.
Wow.
Now, Logic Studio is becoming very accessible lately, and with a lot of support between myself and several other people on different teams, we are about to give Logic a new lease of life for the blind.
That's great. So you're big time into the Pro Audio part of the Mac, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Dennis, it's interesting to know that The Mac is being used more in business settings, you know, whereas Windows was taking precedence, as you said. But here lately, people have started switching. I'm talking about sighted people primarily, have started switching to the Mac. I know of an architectural company here in Birmingham that is switching gradually to the Mac. And I know several businesses that are using Macs now that were not a year or so ago. So Tiger and Leopard have actually made huge leaps for sighted people as well as blind people.
The other reason why companies are switching to the Mac is not so much for the Mac operating system, but a lot of companies are switching, and a lot of people I know are switching to the Mac and running Windows on the Mac because Windows just flies on a Mac, from what I've been told.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah, that's what I've been told.
Many people I've heard have said that Windows flies on the Mac hardware. Okay, well, guys, we've spent time talking about why we switch to the Mac and why somebody would want to switch to the Mac. And if we want to be fair on this podcast, which I do, we need to spend a few minutes talking about what is not on the Mac. In other words, what is not...
Your contact Lino L. Morales is unavailable.
As it should be. The Mac is not perfect by any means, but what operating system is. And so I want to start with Dennis here. And Dennis, I want you to tell me some things that are not quite there, things that you wish were there. Talk about that for a few minutes, and let's be fair.
Okay. Well, probably the main thing is the fact that even though we're on a Mac and we're using, you know, Macs, and we're using the, you know, Apple's operating system and Apple software, the iTunes store is still not totally accessible for us. That's a major thing.
That is the same case for Windows users.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that you would think that it would be more so, being that we're on a Mac.
Absolutely, it's an Apple product.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So that's an issue. The other issues center around the fact that even their own, although, you know, Apple is doing a lot for accessibility, but their word processor and their spreadsheet program are not currently accessible. So we have to look for third party sources for those. So those are the things, the key things I feel need to be fixed.
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you, Nisus Writer Pro works fantastically, but it, once again, it's a third-party product. And I will say this, Microsoft has problems with a couple of their apps. The people at church use a software called Microsoft Publisher. Yeah, and you tell me that's accessible with JAWS or Window Eyes.
Nope.
Exactly.
And Microsoft Access, while people have had to use it and there have been custom scripts written for it and all this, it was never made, quote unquote, accessible.
Exactly.
Not completely.
I haven't seen available. Latest versions of that, although I was happy with Office 7.
Well,
a lot of Office 7.
Have they made Front Page accessible, truly accessible?
They've even discontinued a lot of that.
Yeah, Front Page is not as accessible as it should be. So I'm glad you brought that up, because Apple has the same problem here, apparently, that Microsoft has, and I guess every company has it. We get so excited about making our operating system accessible, which, frankly, Windows did very little to make their system accessible. Screen readers had to write scripts and set files and maps to make a lot of that accessible, until Microsoft Active Accessibility came along, and that took forever. And it still has bugs in it. But Apple knows about these things. They know that iTunes is not fully accessible. Now, it is fair to state that we can use iTunes to search the store. We can use iTunes with our iPod. I did a podcast on that. We can use iTunes to play Audible or anything else, all of our music. All that's accessible. You know, the buttons, back and forward, rewind, all that. And you can't even do a lot of that in Windows. You can do some of it, but not a lot of it, unless you buy $60, $70 set of scripts from a TNT consultancy. If you don't have those scripts and you're not using JAWS, you're pretty much dead with iTunes. So Dennis is right. However,
and even with those scripts don't even give you total access either. They give you as much access as we have now on the Mac.
Exactly, but without them, without JAWS, you don't even have what we have on the Mac.
Right.
Exactly.
So you're right, and these things need to be addressed. Pro Tools needs to be addressed.
Oh, don't stop Pro Tools.
I know, but it has to be mentioned. People are going to ask.
Exactly.
But we don't want to get off on a tangent about Pro Tools. I'm just saying it needs to be made accessible. Every music studio that is a music studio uses Pro Tools, not Sonar.
Exactly.
I don't know of many professional studios using Sonar. I know a lot of amateurs that think they're professionals using Sonar.
There's one or two in London that do, but if you've ever seen their hardware configurations,
again, we don't want to go off on that because then people would get angry that we insulted their hardware. So while I agree with Dennis, absolutely, and when we're all still learning, have you guys noticed that just when you think you know a lot about VoiceOver, you learn something brand new?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, I've been browsing the web just as happy as a little camper should be. And all of a sudden, there came up a discussion last week between DOM mode and group mode. And I'm like, what? How do you get to that? And I didn't even know it existed. And I switched to group mode, and it's been a whole new experience. I've been doing that all week this week with group mode, figuring it out. So just when you think you've learned
everything. If you'd like to explain to any of the people who are listening to this, I think it would be a benefit to them, to be honest.
Okay.
They're aware of it.
Oh, you mean about DOM mode and group mode?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Just highlighting the differences and what each one can serve as.
Okay. DOM mode is similar to JAWS and Window Eyes. What happens is when you load a page, JAWS and Window Eyes use a buffer. Well, Apple doesn't really use a buffer, but it tries to rearrange the page in a logical order so that you can see the links, link, then the headings. But the problem is it doesn't give you an accurate visual rendering of the page. In other words, it changes the whole layout. And let's say a sighted person told you to go to the bottom and click here, click there. You couldn't really do that in DOM mode. You can do it, I think, a little more than you could in Windows, but still it's more of a blind-oriented layout. Group mode is a form of using the web that keeps most of the visual layout of the page. In other words, it doesn't change. If a sighted person told you to go over here on the top right and find this and click here, you could do that. Now, what happens is, let's say you've got a bar on the left that says home, shop, FAQ, support, training, privacy, legal notice. It groups them together under one heading. So when you're arrowing across in VoiceOver, it says home, shop, FAQ, group. And you know that that's a group. You know you can interact with that. You can't click it. So you interact with it, and there are your links. All of your links like they normally would be under DOM mode, but only after you interact with it. And this is the way. So it groups everything into headings, and I call them headings. They're not headings in the HTML sense. It groups everything into little compartments, like a sighted person would see it. And the beauty of this, folks, is when you go to Wikipedia and you look up something, in DOM mode you have to sit here and link, or go to the first heading and then read in little chunks, and everything says link this, link that, because you know Wikipedia links everything. If you're in group mode, all you have to do is hit bow down arrow and you're reading. There's no link, because you're outside the group. You're not interacting with it. You're outside it. So you're reading everything just normally. And I think it reads by paragraph or whatever. Whatever's in that group of links, it'll read you everything that's there. So you sit back, enjoy it, hit bow down arrow every once in a while. Now, a drawback to group mode that you need to know about, and Lou saw me do this morning. while we're on Skype, I get a text message from a friend of mine, Brandon Armstrong, who's a very good friend of mine, and I go to read it. Well, I can't see Brandon's messages. I can see his first message. But group mode hijacks your system. No pun intended to Rogue Amoeba. I hope I don't get sued.
For no money to pay you.
Yeah. Group mode will not allow you to read properly in chat windows. So you have to switch by doing a VO F8 and going to the web tab and changing it to DOM mode and exiting. Then you can view the messages. So there is a drawback. As long as you accept that as a change rather than a drawback, you'll be fine. See, the problem that most Windows users would say, well, there's so many drawbacks. No, we Mac users don't see them as drawbacks. We see them as adaptations or changes that we've had to adopt as Mac users. Would you agree, Dennis?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, we also might want to explain that DOM mode basically means display off-screen model because basically the screen reader is still using an off-screen model.
Absolutely. And so that is worth mentioning. But I'm just fascinated, and I tell people, guys, when they switch to the Mac, unless you're going to use the Mac as your secondary operating system, you know, if you're going to use Windows on your Mac, if you're going to use Mac every day, which all three of us do, we've admitted that, you need to forget most of what you learned under Windows. Because if you, for instance, if you say the command key is the same thing as the alt key, that's not true. And I'll give you an example, and I'm humbled by this example. When my MacBook went to the Apple store for a few days to go in the hospital, and I went back to my wife's Windows PC. Well, I needed to copy something. So I get in Windows Explorer. I almost said Windows Exploder. I apologize. In Windows Explorer, I went in there and I hit Command C on the object I wanted, which for me, I was hitting Alt C. Well, now you all know that in Windows, Alt C does nothing. It's Control C. I got so mad I almost threw the computer up against the wall because I couldn't figure out why it wouldn't copy.
I had that very same experience.
Alt C. Why are you not copying? And then you'd think I learned after I figured out, oh, it's Control V C rather. You'd think I would learn my lesson. Well, old Shaney's already frustrated. He gets to the desktop to paste the item. What does he do? Control V? No. He does Command V, which on a laptop is Alt V. And it still won't paste. It won't work. So I ended up using the context menu. Now, tell me that's stupid or what, but I'm so used to using that command key. And I had heard people in the Mac world say for so long, oh, it's just another alt key. No, it isn't.
Exactly.
It is a combination of the alt
and control.
Thank you, sir. That's exact. And it's never either or. I mean, it's never both. It's either or.
Exactly.
And so that's another thing that you need to be aware of.
I think this is where we should highlight a bit of a thing here. When you move from the Windows to the Macintosh platform, the shortcuts are rather different. As an example, to open folders or applications with... And I had this experience with Windows quite recently, having to fix my mum's PC. Yuck. As Shane has explained, that doing certain shortcuts, they don't work on Windows. So, of course, you notice that, say, to open an application or folder, you just hit the Enter key on a Windows machine, not on a Mac. If you hit the Enter key on a file or folder on the Macintosh, that automatically opens an edit box to rename the file. That includes whether you wish to edit the prefix and the extension or not. To open an application, you can do the Command down arrow key or Command O. Either of those two key combinations work very effectively.
VoSpace will too if you're not in tables mode. If you're in icon or column mode, VoSpace will do it. Now, I want to ask you something. Have you ever been on the desktop, and Windows users are going to get a laugh out of this, and I think it's funny too, but you ever been on the desktop and you want to rename something and you hit F2? You hit F2, and F2 does nothing on the Mac. Boink. You know,
exactly.
Why is it not working? How about you, Dennis? You ever done?
Yeah. the couple times that I have turned on the Windows machine since I've had the Mac, I went into Internet Explorer to try to look up something really fast, and then I tried to use the VO keys and right arrow to navigate the page.
And you end up hitting Control Windows.
Been there,
done that. I could not. Again, I'm sitting here. Why is VoWrite not working?
Yeah.
Windows is going bong, bong, bong. I'm like, no, no, you stupid thing. Oh, yeah. Whoops. Why are the four keys? Hey, wait a minute. Why are the four keys on the right on this Windows computer and the three keys on the left?
Yeah.
What's going on here? Why are there not three on each side or four and two? You know, four on the left, two on the right. What's going on? Who messed up this keyboard? Oh, boy. But Windows users could really have fun with us, because I even do it now. I'll be sitting on the desktop and it'll be late and I want to rename a file, and I'll either hit the space bar to select it, which in the Macintosh opens Quick Look, or I'll hit F2 and get nothing to rename the thing. Oh, boy. So Windows users can have their laughs, too. It's hilarious. Now, one of the things I want to note, when you're renaming a file on the Macintosh, you better, if you're smart, use the extension. In Windows, you know, you can rename it, and you don't have to really use the extension, like .txt, .doc. You need to do that in the Mac, simply because if you don't, it'll change the file type without changing the file.
Exactly.
And you might try to open something in Word that's really an Excel spreadsheet. Uh-uh. It isn't going to happen. And so just thought I would mention that too. So that's a little overview of the foibles we've done and the mistakes we've made in trying to get used to having switched. I want to sort of wrap it up here, guys, and I want to ask your opinions. One more question before I close. Dennis, on a daily basis, what do you use your Mac for on a daily basis, and how has it enhanced your life and your productivity? You've been in Access Technology a long time. How?
Yeah, I'm the old guy, actually, of you guys.
Absolutely. You know. You're in your 90s, aren't you?
Yeah, darn near. I feel like it some days. What am I, 53?
53. You're not too old, Dennis. You still got about 20 years. you got about I don't know if I want to see Dennis Bartlett at 90 still using a Mac. But
we'll see. That with the Zimmer frame and a Mac just mounted on the top of the Zimmer frame.
Yeah, well, the Macintosh computer may be the size of an iPod Shuffle then, though. That may be the thing, guys.
Yeah.
Well, Dennis,
seeing as they just bought a new chip company today or yesterday.
Well, Apple done that. Who?
Yeah, I forget the name of it, but they're primarily noted for their mobile chips, so it's probably for the upcoming iPhone.
Oh my!
The second model. Well.
Yeah, so they can do their own. But I do everything now on the Mac. I do all my email, all my web stuff. Starting to do some audio production, which I had done before on a Windows machine, and everything that I do for work, because I work primarily from home, but I go into the office, you know, once or twice a week whenever the boss says he wants to see me. But other than that, I do everything on the Mac. Like I say, the only reason I've turned on the Windows machine in the last couple of weeks is to get some information that I had there. But other than that, I use the Mac for everything all day.
Good. Lewis?
Same here. I use mine either for office work, whether it be dealing with letters to different companies and other people, scanning documents, etc., etc. the pro audio sector of things, even development work. Because being a musician, being somebody who's completely blind, I am here to make a dramatic change to the way that, along with other people here who have professional audio experience, to make a major change in the way that accessibility works in studios. So I have launched a series of applications for specific hardware that will work only on the Macintosh. Wow. And there's a reason for that. Basically, it's a lot better. And you don't get the hassle. You can do things easily with Xcode. Xcode being a developer tool is brilliant. I can't be without it. And just a little plug here. I do apologize. I must do this. For anyone who's listening and who really wants to get an idea of what the Macintosh is like, or see what Apple products are available, etc., etc., why not go to your nearest Apple store, whether you're UK like me or in the US or wherever you're listening,
is available.
Or go to www.apple.com and have a look at what's there.
Absolutely.
There's so much, there is so much there that I think you'll start drooling. I did.
Yeah,
and look
yeah.
where I am. And I must warn you, I am a Mac addict. I'm an Apple addict. I still use, and I collect old Apple hardware. I restore it and I even customize it to whatever spec is possible. So, as I say, if you're willing, if you really want to see what Leopard can do for you, try it. Because when you go and you put your hands on one of the sexiest computers in the world, the Macintosh, you won't go back. I guarantee
you.
The new Apple keyboard, which comes with the iMac, the Mac Pro, and Mac Mini as an optional component, are approximately from the base of the keyboard to the recess of a key, 4 mil thick. But it is made of an incredibly structurally sound, strong metal casing.
And
the keyboard is so sweet to type with.
Yeah.
It beats any laptop, any Windows-based system in terms of working with a keyboard that is so fluid. It's like working with a Steinway grand piano.
Really love the keyboard.
And the Bluetooth keyboard, the wireless keyboard. Dennis, do you have wired or wireless?
I have wired.
Yeah, the wireless keyboard is the same, except at the top of it is a rounded edge with two little elongated feet, one on each side. It looks identical to the aluminum keyboard that's wired, minus the number pad.
Exactly.
Your laptop keyboard looks very similar. Same size keys, same whatever. If you see your laptop keyboard on a MacBook, you've seen the laptop keyboard that we call Mr. Bluetooth or whatever. And on the bottom of it is a little Apple logo. And I don't know about you guys, but I love the little Apple logo, just feeling of it. It's etched into everything, even my little Apple remote, which looks like the old Apple's iPod Shuffle. Has an Apple logo on it. Did you know that, Lewis?
Yeah.
Of course. I have my Apple remote right in front of me.
The little remote control for Front Row, which is perfectly accessible, by the way. Front Row allows you to play different media, like TV shows, movies, TV tuner, anything like that. The deal is, it looks just when I was taking my Mac out of the box, I thought I had an iPod Shuffle. I thought they had included. I said, wait a minute. This is the old iPod Shuffle. It looks nothing like the new one. What they did for the new iPod Shuffle, they chopped off the upper end, rounded it off, and that's what the iPod... It's tiny. The little iPod Shuffle is about the size of a... I'd say about the size of a postage stamp, maybe a little larger and a lot thicker than a postage stamp. So it's tiny, but the remote looks like the old iPod Shuffle I used to have. It looks identical. the little round wheel, you know, not wheel, but button left, right, up, down.
Yeah.
And, so you've seen that, Dennis, and it looks just like it.
I have one here that I bricked.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I made a little brick out of it.
Talk to us about that.
You sabotaged an Apple product.
It was
your contact Lino El Morales is available.
What was I doing with it? I went to upgrade the firmware.
Oh,
and
God.
Because iTunes said I had to upgrade the firmware.
Yeah.
And I did that, and then I got an error message that it couldn't be upgraded. But then I couldn't get the shuffle to work after that either.
Is that the old shuffle?
Yeah.
The big long one?
That's the older one, you know, with the USB thing on one end.
Sure, yep. Well,
yes.
I actually got the iPod Shuffle 2 GB when it came out. In other words, the Apple Store had just gotten them in. And I walked in there and was looking at the 1 gig. And I told my partner, Gerald, my business partner, I said, my wife may shoot me, but I want the 2 gig. I said, it's only $20 more to get 2 gig. He pulls the 20 out of his wallet and says, here, get the 2 gig and shut up. I got the 2 gig. I brought it home. Guys, it's been used almost every day. So for those who say an iPod is not accessible.
It is.
Baloney.
Yeah.
I use an iPod Shuffle. What they mean by that is the big iPods.
Yeah.
With the menu systems and all this. They are very.
I have actually used an iPod Classic, the new iPod Classic.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They are very.
Though it is said to be inaccessible, with a little patience, it is very accessible.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Especially if you can hear the audible clicks. I cannot. That's why I got rid of my iPod, because I could not hear the clicks. My hearing is so bad that even with hearing aids, I mean, headphones on, I could
you what?
Not, yeah, exactly. I could not hear the audible clicks that the iPod emits as you move around the wheel. However, that does not make it inaccessible. That just means I can't use it. I got the Shuffle. I'm the happiest camper alive. I won't use another MP3 player. Although there are things with the Shuffle I would like them to fix. That's not an issue here.
No product is ever perfect.
No, exactly.
Well, to give you an example, before we got our latest MP3 player, which is a Creative one that my wife uses, we tried, we got a SanDisk and we put Rockbox on it, and that was, it worked, but it really didn't work all that well.
Well, the problem I had Rockbox on my iPod video. And I'd be in the middle of playing something, and it would just lock up. I mean, it would lock tighter than a drum. And the only way to get it out of lockup is to reboot the iPod. Of course, you lost your place.
Yeah.
You had to redo it, go in through all those Rockbox folders. I gave up on Rockbox because while it works, and if you want to sit there and use it, that's great. Number one, I couldn't stand sitting there listening to the speech. There's no way to change it. There's no way to alter it. It's built, you know, they write the speech as is. And it's either slow or fast. There's not a medium. I didn't want to do Rockbox anymore. Plus, you can't play audible on a Rockbox player. So what you had to do with the iPod was you had to switch between the Rockbox firmware. Yeah, and the Apple firmware go back and forth. You couldn't. I didn't like that. You couldn't use it with iTunes. Not that I used it with iTunes under Windows, but you couldn't use Rockbox for a lot of what I wanted to use it for, so I gave up on it after using it for almost a year. I've never been happier than I am with the Shuffle.
Yeah, I uninstalled Rockbox. Well, we used it for about a week, and I uninstalled Rockbox, and we took the SanDisk back to the store, and now she has this Creative one, which for her works fine.
Is she sighted?
No, she isn't.
She's blind.
Yeah.
Okay, well, have you found a way to use iTunes with that Creative yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. I got a Zen Stone.
Yeah, that's what she has.
Yeah,
she has the Zen Stone Plus, the one with a little radio in it.
Yeah, well, the little Zen Stone's awesome. Louis, what do you use? Do you have an MP3 player at all?
I am investing in one as soon as I have the money. I will be, of course, going for an iPod Classic 160 gig.
Okay.
As I don't just want to use it as my music source. I actually want to use it as a backup drive for iPod Pro.
Yeah.
Now
that's for the same hard drive. Hang on, that's the same hard drive that's in your MacBook.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, to anyone who is new to the iPod system, Apple devised, originally, when the first iPod was launched, back in the days of OS 9, had a USB interface, and it only had something like 512 meg. The official first model was 512 meg of data.
Yeah, that's the one I
brought. They started going up to something like 2 gig and everything like that. But now we have some of the most attractive MP3 players around.
Yeah.
And with the iPod, there are several models. But the Classic gives you the ability of playing video files. You can even have an entire DVD.
You can do that on any of them except the Shuffle.
Exactly. You can have an entire DVD stored on most of the iPod models, with the exception of the Shuffle.
Yep.
You can use it for whatever. And being able to use the Classic as a backup hard drive. If I'm going to work on a client's PC, sorry, Mac,
do repair,
generally a Mac, because I no longer deal with Windows, I refuse openly to touch Windows machines. If anyone has a Mac that's had a few problems, then I would use that drive, that iPod with the drive, with the operating system as a virtual system, mount it, boot the system, install the operating system, bish, bash, bosh, done.
Yeah. Now it is,
plus, I have to say, the sound quality of the iPod is heaven. It is absolute heaven, a joy.
Yeah, pretty much. It wasn't under Rockbox, but it is now. As I said, I wish they would increase the volume slightly for me, but they're not going to do that. My hearing is just so bad. But
you got a preamp.
Yeah, I know. But then I would blow my hearing out for sure. But I want to also say that the iPod Shuffle and the Nano are both flash-based. And you can still use them as backup hard drives. The iPod Shuffle comes in a 1 and 2 gig model. The iPod Nano comes in a 1, no, 2, 4, and 8. I think it's 1, 2, 4, and 8.
That's right.
And you can use them as thumb drives. They work fine. There's no problem. You do have to select disk mode for that to happen, and that's easy to do for a Mac user in iTunes, but... And I think even a Windows user in iTunes, I think you can do that. I'm not sure. No.
If you're using iTunes under Windows, then yes, it is doable.
It's doable. However, you have to use your cursor, right?
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
The one thing that is of concern, if you were to use an iPod Classic, the hard drive is primarily formatted in its own Apple volume. It can be read by Windows PCs, but only through iTunes. You have to instruct the hard drive to be formatted then as a FAT32 or NTFS volume, but I don't always recommend that kind
of... Don't do NTFS, because if you use NTFS
on an iPod, you'll lose the machine. You'll lose it.
If you were going to use it as a backup hard drive, your Macintosh wouldn't see the Windows files because Mac doesn't recognize NTFS. So what I do, if I'm going to use...
Mac actually does recognize NTFS, but only as a read-only volume.
Yeah. What I do, if I'm going to do cross-platform, is FAT32, whatever. And it works fine. I've got one thumb drive that's formatted for Mac OS 10 Journal Extended, and I've got one formatted FAT32. So, Dennis, I'm gonna I'm going to wrap it up here, and I'm going to ask you to make some concluding remarks for me about the Mac and what you hope people get out of this podcast. And also, if you want to give any contact info, I'll leave that up to you for people to get with you. And go ahead and talk about that, and then I'll go to Lou, and then I'll wrap up.
Okay. Well, what I hope this helps everybody do is to be a little bit better informed as to what the Macs are and what that you can do with a Mac. For those of you who want to explore it further, I encourage you to. It's certainly accessible, and it certainly works, and it's something that I use on a daily basis. If anybody has any questions directly for me, I can be reached at Dennis, D-N-N-I-S, dot Bartlett, B-A-R-T-L-E-T-T, at rogers.com. And I'll be glad to answer any questions I can.
That's fantastic, and I'm glad you stopped by the Blind World Podcast today. Lewis?
Hi. Before we go, if any of you want to get hold of us, if any of you want to get details of accessibility with Leopard or Tiger, etc., etc., there are several Macintosh user groups that cover the Mac accessibility sector, one of which we are based on, is the Mac Visionaries list. What was the website for it?
It's www.macvisionaries.com, and please don't pay attention to the outdated website. Just find the mailing list link and go from there.
Exactly. They haven't updated in so long. I think the list is. I think the website has become ancient.
A dinosaur. But there is one, Lou, and I'm glad you mentioned it, called www.icanworkthisthing.com. Keith Reedy has a site with lots of information of different subjects, one of which is the Mac with VoiceOver. Check out icanworkthisthing.com. Also, Mac voiceover, one word, dash request at free, F-R-E-E, lists, L-I-S-T-S, .org. That's another Mac list, and I'm glad you were mentioning those. Can people get in touch with you, Lewis? Do you want to?
Yes, of course. If you wish to contact me directly, you can email me at Lewis. Oh, duh. Sorry, I fluffed. It's Lewis J. Brock, that's LewisJBrock, at AOL.com. Or if you wish to get hold of me via Skype, then you can do so freely, and I am available most of the time, able to give demonstrations, etc., etc., or technical advice. You can reach me at LewisJBrock. Easily found. A great guy and a complete nutcase. We are all officially decent guys, and what we don't know about Max, no one knows.
Well, what we don't know, we'll find out.
Exactly.
Well, guys, I want to thank you personally for coming on Blind World today. I'm going to get this up this weekend after I do some editing, as you guys know about, which I hate. But I will be editing this podcast because modern technology has not cooperated, but that's okay. Skype is known for that, and so is the cable company. But I appreciate your help, and I look forward to having you on again, either together or separately. And thanks very much for your insight.
All right, thanks, Shane.
Shouldn't it be fitting that we should end on an Apple chime?
Absolutely. Do you have that?
No.
Well, then why'd you bring it up? No, I'm just teasing. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
And everybody, if you want to contact me, do so at jack728, J-A-C-K-728, at gmail.com. I'll place this podcast up this weekend. Hope you enjoy it. Come back for the next episode of the Blind World Podcast. Until then,
bye.
May the Mac be with you.